walking in the streets of Gulu tonight, it's hard to believe that it's only 4 years ago that the verandas outside every shop in this town were full of sleeping children. Driven out of their villages by the threat of LRA attack, abduction, or even worse. That the last internally displaced persons camp here closed less than 6 months ago. And that for 23 years, the people here have been reliant on food aid. Hard to believe that everywhere among these smiling faces are former child soldiers, that at any time I might brush up against a former or possibly even a current LRA commander. Gulu seems very normal, very vibrant, very peaceful. But scratch the surface of this town and you find that everyone has been touched by this conflict. A jock is typical. Abducted from his parents' home, aged 15, he spent the next 6 years in the bush as a private in the LRA.
I was captured in the night. We were sleeping. There were six of us, including a young boy of about 7 years old. They took five of us and left the young boy because they thought he was too young to move. From there, we started moving. We moved the whole night until 2 a.m.
Ajok says the killing was against his will, but that he had no option, as had he refused, he would have been killed himself. He remained with the LRA for 6 years and fathered three children before escaping in a battle with them.
The next morning, he started following his footprints. Then he accidentally ran into them. He was caught and taken to the commander, and the commander said since he doesn't want to stay with the rest of the people, he should be taken and killed. Then one of the commanders removed his gun, which had a bayonet on the hand, and stabbed the boy on the left side of his chest, but was not yet dead. Then we were ordered to go and step on the boy until he dies. They said it will give us courage and make our hearts strong.
But it's not only boys who are abducted. The LRA also targets girls. The younger girls, known as Ting Ting, become camp helpers. The older girls are known as wives. These girls do not escape the brutality of the regime and are often further traumatised by rape. For most, this will be their first sexual experience. Ajira was abducted at 14. She says that after walking for some distance to the camp, she was sexually assaulted by four LRA commanders.
They will force us into sex, and if you refuse, they tell you that you are not following the rules. So you are killed if you do not give into their demands. And also, if you meet someone on the way, you are supposed to beat that person to death. If you don't know how to use a gun, you use bangers.
As a younger member of the group, Ajira did not have a gun and had to kill with bits of wood or machetes, which are known locally as pangas. She says she was haunted by her first kill for a long time.
It was really painful for me, and I felt bad because after I killed that person, I would see visions of that person's begging me to kill and say, "Why do you want to kill me? You are killing me for nothing. I have not committed any crime."
Ajira says that to refuse meant death or a beating so severe that death would often follow. Winnie is a counsellor for Child Voices International at the Residential Rehabilitation Centre where Ajira lives. She says that, as is the case with most returning abductees, at first Ajira had trouble fitting in.
This little girl, when she came to the centre, she was very reserved. Very, very reserved. If others are playing, you find her seated under the tree. Sometimes you find her beating the child. It was not a very easy moment. It took time for her.
At the rehabilitation centre, girls are taught skills such as sewing, cooking and making beads. The aim is to enable them to find employment in the community. But as single mothers returning from the bush, they often struggle. One of the projects trying to help is the Te Okuano Tailoring Centre.
We have our school for Te Okuano Tailoring Center at La Roe. Those who do well continue here. Here is the place where they get some small money. But from there is the school where we train them. So here also I help them in designing, cutting, and other things.
Dutch video journalist Ruud Elmentorp met Joseph Konyi at his camp in Garamba in 2006. I asked him what he made of Konyi.
How do you describe a rebel leader? Because after all, at that moment, it's just one of you and us. Also another human being who's happened to be in another position. And that's interesting. That's interesting. So I had the chance to shoot one question to Mr. Joseph Konyi. And somehow I asked him about the atrocities that took place in Uganda and also in Sudan. And actually he gave an answer to it, but the other journalists were quite shocked. Even the whole delegation was quite shocked that I was able to ask that question, but I just thought that needs to be asked, because that's on the lips of everybody, of course.
And his answer was?
That he was not the one who did it.
And did you believe him?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I've been around as a journalist for some years now. And the truth is something I totally lost grasp on. The one says this, the other one says that, so it's hard to say. You can only conclude that something went wrong somewhere and that they both have to be guilty somehow, meaning the president of Uganda and Joseph Konyi.
Konyi currently has a warrant out against him from the International Criminal Court. After peace talks broke down, troops from Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo and Sudan launched a joint attack called Operation Lightning and Thunder on Konyi's camp in Garamba. Chairman of Gulu Human Rights Focus and Archbishop of Gulu, John Baptiste Odama, has met Konyi on several occasions. He says he doesn't think the military approach or the ICC arrest warrant send the right message. He says that the LRA get more aggressive when they're attacked. Odama is convinced that Konyi is seriously considering agreeing to a peaceful, traditional truth and reconciliation process known as Mato Oput. As evidence, he points to the agreed ceasefire in Uganda, but he thinks he is held back by fear of the ICC and also for his life.
In one of the latest visits we went to him in November 29th, 30th, we were there with him and we slept in his camp. He said, "Look, you people, you are telling me to sign the peace agreement. I am like somebody who has a spear in my hand. I'm chasing peace. And I would like to spear peace so that people can eat peace. But in the meantime, there is a lion chasing me. And this lion also wants to eat me. Now, I'm wondering, should I continue chasing the peace, or should I turn and fight the lion?" In this, it was clear we understood what it meant. He was talking about his going for signing the peace. At the same time, there is a ICC behind him. This sends a conflicting signal.
One person that understands Konyi better than most is Juliet, abducted at the age of 8. Brought up by Konyi himself, she spent 15 years in the bush with him, much of it spent helping in his house. And when she reached the age of 18, she became his wife, going on to bear him 2 children. Disarmingly childlike despite her 24 years, she maintains that Konyi is a good man and has no quarrel with Museveni.
As you see him compared to others, he is a nicer man. That for him, he does not hate Yoweri Museveni, but the enmity God has created between him and Museveni, he cannot explain. That according to him, he had never thought of going to the bush to fight, and he does not know the reason as to why he is in the bush. So he cannot hate Museveni or the UPDF. He says that the war they are fighting is planned by God. It was not in his interest.
Juliet describes Konyi as a good man. She says she's never heard him order anyone killed, but has heard Konyi berating commanders who rape and kill indiscriminately.
I was with Konyi when we heard on the radio that most of the officers were involved in that act, for example, in Lira and other places. Konyi was also talking to the officers about it, and he said they had done wrong in God's sight because God does not want you to kill or rape. He said that if those officers did not surrender to the UPDF, then one day God would take their lives.
The representative of the government in Lira, near where the Balonyo massacres took place, is resident district commissioner Mrs. Joan Pachuk. She says that the LRA have committed serious atrocities and claims Konyi has failed to negotiate.
When you see us going all out to talk to somebody who has mined us, abducted our women, raped our children, forced them into, you know, being child soldiers, and yet we still go out to try to get him to understand that these are your people you're killing, and then he doesn't. I think the government is very clear that the government would want peace in northern part of Uganda.
But how do the LRA's many victims feel about Konyi? Balonyo is some miles outside Lira, an hour and a half's drive south of Gulu. It was here in 2002 that over 200 Langi people were massacred indiscriminately by the LRA. Sarah saw her husband killed in front of her. She also lost her 6 children during the massacre.
We were in separate rooms when they came. They took him from the room he was in and cut off his head. I saw it because by then I was already out. They told me to lie down because they wanted to hit my head. But I told them to leave me now since they have already killed my husband. So they left me.
Despite her suffering, her response when asked what should happen to Konyi is surprising.
My opinion is that we should just forgive Konyi because we can't add one wrong to another.
Forgiveness seems to be a theme here. But Peter, who was abducted with his 5 siblings and whose younger sister was killed by the LRA, is not sure reintegrating them will be easy. He cautions that some of the LRA children have been brought up in the bush and know no other way to live.
Even these small rebels, they even love so much to kill. Sometimes they just even ask the commander, "Me have taken so long without killing. Can I have one today?" You can imagine such things.
Do you think they understand what killing means and what being dead is?
I think these people don't understand anything. Because I can't imagine how somebody feels so nice killing. I really don't understand it. These are the people, some of these people were born from the bush and they grew up from the bush and they have never been out. So I can imagine that's how they are brought up and that's why they love so much to kill. They can easily kill you without even mercy. They don't have mercy. Sincerely, they don't have any mercy.
Chief Kadi of Gulu and member of the interfaith group, the Acholi Religious Leaders Peace Team, Khalil Magara, says,
while they think of war, let them think of the children. Because when we were in the bush, I heard voice of children crying. And that voice will remain witness. UN is the grandfather. If you see your children fighting with bottles and you are on the upper floor, you'll come down. Will you take the biggest bottle to beat them down? No. You say, stop. Throw down the bottles. Never play with that dangerous thing. So as United Nations, the world should take responsibility of seeing that the negotiation goes on. Because Konyi said, even before Christmas, he can sign. That little room that he still agrees to negotiate and sign. Why don't we capitalize on that? And we see that they sign before Christmas, and the conflict come to an end.